Welcome to the Victory Show.
Hey, Victors, welcome to this episode of the Victory Show. If this is your first time joining us, I'm Travis Cody, best-selling author of 19 books and the creator of Bestseller by Design, where I've had the privilege of helping hundreds of business consultants, founders, and entrepreneurs write and publish their own best-selling books. Through that process, I've discovered a really fascinating pattern. Most businesses really struggle to break past 7 figures per year in revenue. So on this show, I sit down with some of the world's most successful founders, CEOs, leaders, and business owners to uncover the strategies they use to scale way past that mark so you can do the same. So get ready for some deep insights and actionable takeaways that you can implement in your life and your business starting now. Today's guest is a high-impact operator with a track record of transforming enterprise SaaS companies from the inside out. Alan Rudolph is a seasoned C-suite executive with over 25 years experience across B2B, SaaS, cloud computing, and technology services, specializing in building scalable operations, coaching world-class teams, and driving some serious growth. As COO for Mitratech from 2020 to 2022, Alan played a pivotal role in orchestrating a $1.55 billion sale at a remarkable 21x PF cash EBITDA multiple. That's the biggest multiple I've heard yet, so we'll have a conversation about that. Most recently, he served as COO of Cenedin, a global leader in hospitality SaaS, where he led strategy across sales, marketing, revenue management, and reservation systems. So whether he's mentoring internal talent or crafting customer success programs that actually stick, Alan brings the discipline of execution with the mindset of transformation to every company he touches. Alan, thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Travis. That was I don't know if I could have said it as well, so that was a great intro. Really appreciate it.
So let's talk about how, like, what did you do to get a 21x exit? What were your some of the strategies that you did that? The biggest one I've heard so far on this show has been 15. So I'm like, 21's fantastic. That's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you. You know, 21x pro forma cash EBITDA is definitely best in class, world class. But it's all about execution. It's about ensuring that you have the right people in the right seats. I always talk about people first. And with those people, then it's about process. How do we know what we're going to do, when we're going to do it, how we're going to do it, how we all execute together? And then with that process, you need to automate. You need to have technology. You need to have systems that take those mundane processes and automate them. And obviously the world we live in today with AI, you need to leverage AI, but you need to do it in a smart way. And you'll probably ask me a whole bunch of questions and we can talk about that some more. But then lastly, but most importantly, it's all about the data, Travis. And what I mean by that is, as an executive, I want to wake up every morning. The first thing I do is I want to be able to look at my dashboards. I want to understand what's going on in the business in the past 24 hours, last week, last month, et cetera. And I want to be able to forecast that out so I can make real-time business decisions based upon the data. How often have we been in companies, folks like me, where we wait till the end of the month and the accountants close the books, and all of a sudden you're 2 weeks into the new month and you get your data? And it's already stale because 2 weeks have gone by, maybe 3 weeks. And you're like, what am I going to do? How am I going to do this? The answer is don't accept that. The answer is you need real-time data so you can make data-driven decisions, number one, on a real-time basis. And then number two, based on how that data changes, don't be scared to change the decisions. Because again, the data drives results. The data drives growth. The data drives optimization. And so it's so important as a, you know, executive in PE-backed enterprise software companies that we look at the data, understand the data, trust the data, and then we make decisions based upon that data.
Wow. So let's talk a little bit about that from an operator standpoint then. What would be, in any business, what would be some of the top, like, pieces of data that you would want to see every day?
So when you're in an enterprise software company, one of the most important pieces of data is, and I'm not going to talk about sales and all the metrics. That's a whole separate
sure.
string of data. But what's really important is, because again, as a COO, chief operating officer, or you could also call me a CCO, a chief customer officer, so I understand the voice of the customer. Two of the most important operating metrics are your gross retention rate and your net retention rate. And what that means is your gross retention rate is simply day one of the year, you open your books with a dollar of revenue. You still have a dollar of revenue at the end of the year. That would mean you have 100% gross retention. If I grow that retention, i.e., at the end of the year, that dollar becomes a dollar 20, that means I have 120% net retention. So, in other
Wow.
words, I want to retain my revenue and I want to grow my revenue, gross and net retention. Along with that, you have overall customer satisfaction, something called CSAT in the software business. So whether it's green, yellow, red, whether it's 1 to 10, however you as a company decide to measure CSAT, obviously it's important that customers are satisfied. And those are the objective metrics. And then thrown into that mix are the subjective metrics. And I talk about voice of customer. So I meet with customers on a regular basis, and I want to understand what is going on in their business that we as an enterprise software company can help meet their needs, meet their growth, meet their expansion, meet the ongoing needs of the business. And again, so you come back to, I want to retain my business, I want to grow my business, and I want to make sure I have satisfied customers. Again, high level, those are the metrics. Obviously, I want to see those metrics sliced and diced globally, regionally, by customer, by segment, by industry, et cetera. And then you can dovetail down into the various pieces of the business. Again, talking all about the post-sale aspect of what happens in an enterprise software company. And there's 20, 30, 50 other detailed metrics that we look at within each line of business on an ongoing basis. But we'll start there with the gross and net retention and the overall customer satisfaction scores.
And so will you with the net retention, will you do that on a weekly basis as you're going through the year, or is that something you're doing daily?
We'll look at how we're doing throughout the quarter,
Got
but
it.
we typically look at that on a monthly and quarterly
Yep.
basis, and then obviously roll it up into an annual basis. So we set our gross retention and net retention metrics at the beginning of the year. We know what they should be by quarter because we know when contracts are coming up for renewal. We have a general sense as to, when contracts are going to renew, what our expectations are with our customers, whether they will renew. And let me throw out there, in terms of world-class operating metrics, you want your gross retention to be north of 95%. Again, maximum is 100% gross retention. You want your target operating metric to be north of 95. The only reason you want to lose a customer, I say two things. They go out of business or they get bought, and they're sort of similar. But again, if as long as you're north of 95%, that means you open the year day one with a dollar worth of revenue, you close the year with 95 cents worth of revenue. That is a world-class operating metric.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the customer retention then. Like, so it sounds like you're really big into like getting a pulse of customer satisfaction. Are you doing that through surveys, phone calls, going out and meeting with them? Like, how do you?
All the above. And we're tracking both objective and subjective, right? We're doing scoring. We're taking getting results every time we do a project for a customer, every time we resolve an open ticket or an open case. We may or may not be doing an NPS score, net promoter score, on a regular basis. So there's a variety of different ways objectively to gather the metrics associated with customer health, excuse me. And then on a subjective basis, we're doing surveys, we're talking to our customers, we're having periodic business reviews, we're having executive reviews. We may, meet customers anecdotally at conferences and while I'm traveling around, et cetera. So it's really important to marry together the objective and the subjective so that we truly understand what's
Understand.
going on in our customer base.
So fascinating to me because I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here, but so I worked in Hollywood for 15 years, and my mentor, right before he passed away, he wrote a book, and the subtitle of the book was How to Regulate the or How to Fix the Accidental Industry. That's what he called Hollywood. And one of the things that he said is so interesting is it's called show business. But when you look at it from a business perspective, Hollywood will spend $300 million on something in total secrecy. And then they'll go and poll the customer. And when the customer hates it, then they panic. But like what I'm going with that is it's been interesting this year, especially well, maybe the last 4 or 5 years. Like there seems to be Hollywood seems to actively hate their customers. They don't ask them what to do, and when something fails, they're like, "These guys are, deplorables," as they'd use the word, right? So it's interesting to me that you've got a company here that with Mitrotech, you were there a couple of years, and you exited at 21X, right? And a big part of that is because you've got clients and customers that just love you. So it's fascinating to me how many businesses don't make customer satisfaction a part of their core operating system with the business. And
Which
everybody
makes
seems
no
to be
sense
so
to me.
focused on growth, 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 and dollars at all costs that nobody's stopping to go, are we building a tool that people are using and can and like it and it's easy to use? So was for you and your career, like when did it occur to you that the customer, satisfaction with what you were doing was such an integral part of the success and growth?
If I must say so, day one. I
Yeah.
mean, without customers, I'd say to my teams all the time, yes, the company gives you a paycheck, but who do you think really creates that paycheck? Our customers. Our customers pay us, and that gives us the ability to pay you as employees. So customer satisfaction is so critical to the ongoing health of the business. And again, my business is enterprise software, but again, you talk about Hollywood, talk about manufacturing, talk about any business that we all understand and know, it's all about the customer and driving great results for the customer. When I go out and meet with customers, that's the point I made earlier, which is I want to understand what is your business plan for the next 12, 15, 18 months? What are your personal goals of and objectives to support that plan? Now, I want to be able to make sure that we, as an enterprise software company, as a service provider effectively, are doing everything possible so that you, our customer, can meet your goals and objectives, your personal goals and objectives, and the company's goals and objectives. Because that's all we are. We're part of, you have a wheel, you're spinning around. You're executing, and I just want to make sure that we're doing everything possible so you can optimize and meet your target goals and objectives.
Wow. That's a fascinating idea. All right, so let's talk a little bit about your philosophy of you need the right people in the right place, and then you also need the right systems around that. I've heard people talk about putting people in the right places, right? But I've never really heard them then talk about how do you marry the processes with that. So for you, when you get hired on as a CEO and you're coming into a new company, like what's the first sort of like what's your process of kind of looking at the business to understand are the people in the right seats and are they the right people?
So first and foremost, you have to understand the business, its objectives and goals, what are the target metrics, et cetera. Start with all the financial goals and objectives. And then within my business, and let's stay in this world of, post-sale operations in a enterprise SaaS company, as chief customer officer. And what's important to me is to understand how do I structure my team? How do I define the various pieces of that team? And then making sure that I have the right leader in place. And I go about that through both objective testing of my leaders. They may or may not already have some standardized testing, but I marry that up then with a formal interview process. And again, there some of it really then just simply boils down to the years of experience and a quick study of Is this person in the right seat? And if they're not, then is there another seat for them to sit in inside the company, or is it better for them to move on? And you know what I found in terms of managing the team, managing the people through this process, be as transparent as possible. You'll get tremendous respect for transparency. And sure, whether we're living in good or bad or different or uncertain economic times, it's all about to lead people, you need to be transparent with people in terms of where you're going in that journey. Now, sure, that anytime you run a business, there are certain aspects of what you do and how you do it that, need to stay confidential for some period of
Sure.
time. But over time, everything becomes transparent. Everything becomes getting the team, getting the people to understand what the journey is and how we're going to achieve that journey. So that's my strategy. That's my methodology in terms of how to run highly competitive, highly complex teams and getting the right people in the right seats.
So how do you identify sort of the natural leaders in a company, and then what do you do to, I guess sort of prep them to for more responsibility?
You got to look at successes. You have to look at, and I'm going to say successes and failures, but more importantly, the successes, because hopefully any failures that a good leader has, they've already figured out how to turn the failure into a success. So you want to look at and analyze a leader, starting, and I'm going to say a leader is a manager of one to a manager of many, right? Or it could be an individual contributor, but you want to analyze and look at what people are doing, how they're doing it up and down the chain of command, and identify successes, and then leverage those successes and try to figure out, where should that person belong as the organization, molds, grows, acquires, et cetera. And it's a great career progression to take somebody that's been successful and, quite frankly, take them out of their comfort zone and put them into another area where they're l using their lessons learned in terms of being successful, but now they're in, a different subject matter expertise. Take somebody that's been in, for example, a support organization, which is a very difficult job, and go put them in product development. Go put them in product marketing. Move them around the organization. That's how you take, because
Wow.
then once you take a leader that has multiple wins or multiple successes, you get that much more value out of that person over time, and you get that person excited about making the company itself be successful.
That's really smart. Are there specific skills that you will help your leaders, get trained in? And if so, like what do you consider sort of the most important skills for any leader to have?
I mean, excluding all the technical
Sure.
capabilities, industry knowledge, right? Those are givens. Leadership skills are paramount to success. Leadership skills in terms of how to manage people, how to strategize on what the business is doing, how it's doing it, how to do the blocking and tackling, how to figure out what's working, what's not working, how to move forward. One of the key tools I use, and again, I come back to basics, is, and I update this on a regular basis, which is a simple SWOT analysis, right? Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And oh, by the way, it's one page,
So
right? So if you're a leader,
all of your leaders have their own SWOT.
absolutely.
That's that's
Come back to
fantastic.
what we just talked about a few minutes ago, Travis, in terms of how do I evaluate who is a good leader and who's not, or how to get the right people in the right seats. One of the first things I always ask for is give me a SWOT analysis of your business. And I tell them up front, that's one page, and it better be a font that I can read. So don't make it super, right? Because again, I look at this as it's 3 to 5 items in each quadrant: strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And if you're a good leader, you can clearly understand your business, and you can summarize the SWOT into those 3 to 5 items for each category.
Wow.
And what you now do with that is that's how you put your 30, 60, 90, 180, 300, next year plans in place. right? Leverage your strengths, acknowledge your threats, right? Make sure you understand what the threats are, and then obviously, the weaknesses and opportunities you want to take advantage of. You got to fix the weaknesses and you have to take advantage of the opportunities. So that's what makes a good leader great, right? Good to great, right? And so it's the understanding of your business and acknowledging what's going on in the business and constantly looking for improvement. One of the key aspects of what I do and how I do it is constant transformation. The moment you get stuck or stalled or stop making change, you're dead. You're out of business, right? There is no such thing as just SOP, because again, in the world I live in of enterprise SaaS, if we think about, my career and all the technology changes that we've been going through, and they're only coming faster. I mean, somebody said to me the other day, like, how long have you been working with AI? Well, how long? You don't tell me 5 years, because 5 years ago we didn't know what AI was. Now, we might have talked about business decision making, we might have talked about machine learning, and obviously technology has evolved. But we all better be leveraging AI today, but acknowledging what it can and cannot do, and still understanding that there's a human aspect of what we do and how we do it.
So fascinating, because I get asked that question all the time of like, well, Travis, why would I work with you? I can just use AI to write my book, right? And I'm always like, well, especially if you publish on Amazon now, that if you use AI and they have criteria, there's all, hey, AI generated content. I'm like, I don't know about you, but if I'm going to go read a book on leadership and it says created with AI, like, how much credibility do you give that book, right? That's the first thing. But even in, they ask me if I use AI in my work, and the answer is yes on certain processes, but I still have human editors as part of my core process, right? Because you know what AI can't do when I get done with my book? So let's say I would never do this, but let's say I wrote a book entirely AI. I didn't even edit anything. AI, at the end of the day, I can't say, hey, read this book and let me know how you feel when you go through it. Right. So even in writing there, I always have a human go through the last part of it, because I want to know how is it impacting you when you're going through it. 10 years from now, maybe AI will be like, Travis, it made me feel this. But for now,
The
this is really
human
interesting.
aspect, and we could talk for hours about this, but I'll just it just I couldn't agree with you more that there's a human aspect of AI. I'll just give you a quick little story. Came back, obviously we're right after Thanksgiving break putting this together, and I was out visiting family in Los Angeles, and we're at a restaurant, and we had just parked and all, and there's this little parking lot, it's tight, it's busy, and a Waymo comes in. And it pulls into the parking lot, and I'm like, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, does that car realize it's a dead end? Like, how is it going to do an 8-point turn and figure out a way to get out of here? And it ultimately did, but it was a long journey. There was a line of cars backed up, and I just use that as an example of how far along are we in the journey of AI and solving these complex problems? And so, sort of relate that to business. If you get stuck somewhere, you can't just always go, oh, let pump it into AI and see what it answers. It's not always going to give you the best answer. So I just use that Waymo that gets stuck in the back of the parking lot has way too many people upset and frustrated and all, and took 20 minutes to get out of there, when a human being would have had 90 seconds and been out of there. So I'll use that as my example of the day in terms of human versus AI.
There's a marketer I follow who in the marketing world is probably one of the top two or three guys with AI and marketing. And he was doing an Ask Me Anything, and somebody said, well, in this age of AI, what's my advantage? What's my hidden advantage? And he said, your unfair advantage in the age of AI is to become more human. Because more and more people are outsourcing even their critical thinking to AI. So as long as you keep those and you keep your authenticity, He's like, you just, there won't be any competition.
Right,
So I would
right.
like to talk a little bit because we hear about, especially with SaaS companies, you know, there's people saying, well, eventually we'll get to the point where, you know, I'd come to you, Alan, and be like, well, I see your SaaS, but you know, with a good developer and a right AI tools, I can just build my own version of your SaaS in-house, right? How far away are we from that, and what will AI never be able to do that enterprise solutions can?
I don't want to take a guess at how far away. I think we're a long way away.
Yeah, feels like that to me, but
We definitely leverage AI to be more productive, to be more efficient, to manage costs, to drive higher quality. But at the end of the day, as a SaaS organization, enterprise SaaS, and I sit in the world of B2B, but I don't think it matters if it's B2B or B2C. It's the creation of that solution that meets the needs of the customer. And AI is not going to solve that. And so that's number one. Number two, it's what I said earlier. It's understanding the customer's business needs and customers, tens, hundreds, thousands of customers, bringing all that back, feeding it into the product management teams, and then developing the best solution to solve a complex business problem across those tens, hundreds, thousands of customers. That's what a enterprise SaaS company does. That's what makes us unique, and that's what will prevent AI from just solving that problem.
Yeah, that's so fantastic. All right, line things here because I want to respect your time. A couple of things in your career working with companies of all sizes. What are sort what I guess what are the core common sort of mistakes that you see businesses making, like, you know, the top two or three where you could go 90% of businesses when you go in, generally they're doing this and this, like without fail.
I'm going to start with something very simple in terms of how to avoid failure. God gave us two of these and one of these. We all have to listen more. I'll admit I can be just as guilty as anybody else. Like, no, I'm just going to keep talking. You have to just keep listening and, go execute, right? We have to listen to our teams. We have to listen to our customers. We have to acknowledge our competitors. Competitors are good. Competitors create a market. We need to understand what they're doing, how they're doing it, and figure out a way to get better on that. And then obviously, what about our investors, right? We have to talk with, understand, make sure we're meeting goals and objectives of the investors. So again, there's a broader just communications aspect of what we do and how we do it so that we avoid the mistakes, that we listen to what's going on in all those categories around us so that we can in fact be successful. And then the number two item that I want to talk about, Travis, is again, it comes back to what I talked about at the very beginning, is it's about data, it's about understanding and trusting the data. And then it's making businesses decisions based on the data. How often have we gone down a path and we start making business decisions and either the data's wrong, which is a fundamental problem, or we don't understand what the data's telling us, and so we make bad assumptions. So number three, don't be scared to change the decisions you made. Number two, days, hours, minute, whatever it turns out to be. Don't be scared to change a decision you made yesterday.
So it's so fascinating that there's the once we've made a decision, how there's kind of a reluctance to change it.
It's my decision. You can't change that. What do you mean? I made that decision yesterday. That was the right decision. No, it was the right decision yesterday. If
Not
something's
today.
changed today, change the decision.
I love it. Well, let's talk a little bit of, is it Sendyne? Am I saying that right?
Yes.
What, so let's talk about what Sendyne's up to because you're in SaaS, specifically in hospitality. So what is it that you, what's the problem you
Sendyne's a hospitality software company focused on, the front end of sales and marketing systems and booking engines and digital marketing. Sendyne is a private equity backed enterprise SaaS company. very successful in its own right, survived COVID, right? We talk
Hey,
about,
that's pretty
the impact.
good.
Yeah, exactly. The impact of COVID on a company like that, it had to shrink down and grow back up. But it is a company that is, globally addressing the mid and upper mid market in hospitality and driving those, helping drive those customers to success.
So for you and what you're doing, first off, is what's the big challenge that Sendyne is trying to solve for your customers?
It's the business systems that I just talked about, and net net, it's driving more bookings that are direct, so maximizing the profit or maximizing the revenue through our customers. We call, direct bookings versus in the travel business, there's the online travel agencies, the OTAs, and there's all sorts of other systems, and they take a big piece of the pie, and that's obviously a problem because it cuts into profit. So it's all about how do all these systems help you become that much more successful in driving direct bookings and driving revenue.
So for the next, so obviously we're winding down the year here. So what are your goals with Sendyne for the next year? And then at the same time, like forecasting out 5 years, where do you hope it is? You looking for another
Sendyne
exit
is a
within 5 years?
company, better be less than 5 years. Sendyne as a company is going through transformation just because of what's going on in the business around us. Everything we talked about in terms of technology and obviously what's going on in the macroeconomic environment, which is helping and hurting companies depending on where you fit in the spectrum. But it comes back to basics, Travis, and every company I've been with, and whether it's today or tomorrow when I talk about a Sendyne or a Metratech, or I was with this company called Conga and Aptus in 18 to 20. It's meeting the needs of the customer, and it's driving customers to success with great products. That's what's most important in the business world that I live in today in terms of enterprise SaaS B2B. It's listen to your customer, make great products that meet the needs of the customer. And if you do both of those items, that will take care of what I talked about earlier, being your gross and net retention. And then you drive world-class numbers in that regard. And you'll continue to grow. You operate the company optimally, and so you drive profitability accordingly.
So for you personally, I mean, you've gone, through this cycle of growth and exit a few times now. What is it about that cycle that you love so much?
It's funny. I told this story many years ago earlier in my career, and I love playing all sorts of different sports, but I'm not a pro athlete. I'm a pro businessman, right? And so, whether you call it scoring, winning a game, scoring a touchdown, dunking a basketball, that's what an exit of a company is. That's what
That's
closing a
funny.
deal is. That's what's winning a large, complex customer in a very large transaction. Back about 10 years ago, I was involved as the executive sponsor of one of the largest transactions with a customer that we won for the company I was with at the time in the infrastructure outsourcing and enterprise applications business. That's a high five. That's world-class performance. And that's what gets me excited every day. Again, I'm not going to be the pro athlete. I'm going to be the pro professional businessman that drives these companies to success.
I love it. That's fantastic. What a great way to end. Alan, thanks so much for taking your time out of your schedule.
Thanks,
I really
Travis.
appreciate it. This has been a great conversation.